I'm not joking. When the bomb goes off and you see Doris on fire, that's almost... I don't see the movie. I see the real thing. And it's pretty accurate. That's a horrific thing. One thing you'll never get out of your head or your nostril is the smell of someone burning and the sound of someone burning.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here as your hosts. This is a very special episode, one that Michaela and I have talked about and tried getting nailed down really since the beginning of the podcast. This is our Cokeville Miracle episode. And we have two gentlemen. A gentleman, I don't know if that's the right word or not. Just kidding. Yes, we have two incredible men who were there on that day. We're so excited that they are willing to sit with us and talk to us about that, about their experience and what happened on that day. We are here with Brad, Nate, and Jeremy Jameson. Were you friends before this all happened? I'm sure you were.
Yes. There.
Yep.
We've been friends since kindergarten times.
Yeah. Wow. Probably before that, but we just don't remember.
Yeah.
So who's the lucky one in that relationship?
I wouldn't say it's a relationship.
A bromance.
It's a bromance. I'm probably the lucky one, to be honest.
Aww. Well, I don't know. Brad's been a great friend over the years, and it's been easy to hang out with him, be with him. We golf together. We play basketball together. We referee together. We still do that stuff when we can. Brad's a very, very close friend, and it's been a great friendship so far. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, until I ruin it.
You can ruin it.
Aww. Honored to have you both. Thank you so much. Jeremy, that was a little introduction into your friendships, but
yes.
I'm going to turn it over to you both, let you introduce your families a little bit, and then you guys can just go ahead and get going and tell us what that day was like for you.
As Brent has said, Jeremy Jameson, I have three kids, a wife first, and her name is Rachel, and met her during college days. I was living with her brothers at the time, and that story is a whole other story, obviously, but it was a quick decision to marry her for sure. And it has been great ever since, 26 years now. I have three kids. First child was a girl, and her name is Jerrica Jameson. Just to kind of introduce her a little bit, she is, was featured on the youth album in 2023 as the theme song singer. So she sang the theme song for that year, I Can Do All Things. And so she has had an opportunity to sing for the world, I guess you could say, through the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience with her. She's been able to go throughout the nation, actually. We've gone all the way to Missouri and Kansas and northern, southern Utah, Idaho, Wyoming, and all different places to do firesides with her. And she's been able to do that and be part of that, part of her mission in life, I think, to be able to serve and do what she's doing for the youth. And she just did one of a fireside probably maybe it was about a week or two ago. That was a good experience. And now she's got a man in her life, and she's going to get married in November. So
it's congratulations.
Pretty cool to watch all this come about. And then I have a middle child, Ashlyn, excuse me. She graduated from beauty school and taken that on, and she's really enjoyed that. But she also, in the middle of her going to beauty school, just as she was ending and she finished, she came to Rachel and I and said, I want to go on a mission. And we're like, wow, cool. That's we cool. thought you would be the last one to go, but hey. but we were really excited when she decided to do that. And it was the best thing for her. She just absolutely loved her mission. She ended up serving in the Washington, D.C. South Mission. And then I have a son. His name is Brannick. And he is now right now serving a mission. He's 18. He's serving a mission in California, Ventura Mission right now. And he's been out for about 8 months or so. Well, actually longer than that. It's been since last August. So it's about close to 9 months. And he's enjoying life and having fun there. Obviously, he's really thriving in that area and is really enjoying his mission. And I didn't say, but I live in the Logan, Utah area. And I've been here for since 1996. So it's been about 30 years I've been here in this area. So
nice. Awesome.
All right, Brad, your turn.
All right. So, Brad, Nate, when I was growing up, I was known as Brad Shane Nate. And then as I got older, people just always kind of removed the Shane in it. But my mom wanted it kind of that way. So here in Cokeville, that's what I'm known as. But anyway, and so you'll probably refer to myself that way just because that's where I was known back then at that time. But real quick, so, you know, yeah, I got married as well. I got a wonderful wife named Stephanie. She's from Young Ward there in Young Ward, Utah. And we have three kids ourselves. The oldest is on a mission in Ghana and is doing awesome. It's fun to, you know, I'd say see his letters, but he doesn't really letter much, but he sure loves to talk to us when he has his B-Day opportunity. And so that's been a blessing as far as like the church allowing that, you know, kind of being a change. And so he's having a great time out there and he's doing well. My middle child, he's a sophomore this year, enjoying school, just kind of doing the school thing, playing basketball, just kind of having fun. And then my youngest, MJ, she's the single girl there. And, she's really into dancing and we've gone to a bunch of these dancing things with her and she's just amazing. She's awesome. And, yeah, I mean, I'm very blessed to have that. I lived in Cokeville like Jeremy did. And then after we graduated, I went on a mission into Independence, Missouri. And when I returned, I went basically right to Logan. And I pretty much have lived there until 2020, where my wife and I and the three kids, we moved back to Cokeville, which is also a hard thing because some of those kids actually had to go into the same elementary, if that makes any sense. That's kind of, that plays on your heart more than you think it would. And thoughts. But anyway, so then I moved back here and I live in Cokeville today. And how do I put that? I sleep in Cokeville, but I'm in Logan a lot. So go ahead, Jeremy.
I was going to say, I did fail to mention that I did serve a mission also, but it was in Brisbane, Australia.
Nice. So, that's awesome.
Yeah, awesome.
Okay. Well, if you guys want to just dive into your story in that day, that would be awesome.
Okay. I guess I can start and then Brad can finish out or whatever. So May 16th, 1986 was the year that this all took place, where there was the Cokeville hostage situation. And on that day, it wasn't really any different than any other day that I had. It was a nice, sunny, bright day. And it was a gorgeous day, but in Cokeville, obviously, in May, it's still really cold. But
you still cover your flowers in June, if that makes
sense. Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's not a warm area all the time.
Right, exactly. But I remember that day just arriving at school and just starting and feeling like just a very normal day as any other day we had that during that time. And as that day was progressing, it was probably noon time about when we had recess, and then we ended up having music class the very, very next hour. I'm kind of jumping into it pretty quick, at least on this, but just to tell my story. But anyway, during that music hour, we had the opportunity to get to as a class to be together, Brad and I, and we were there, and it was with Mr. Miller. He was our teacher at the time, and
we had a concert the night before. Yes. And he had recorded it.
Yes. And so he had recorded it, and he had left the room at the time to go get that tape. That back then we used VHS, obviously. It was a long time ago, so we all remember that.
And Brent doesn't remember that, but we remember that.
We do, actually.
We're pretty old.
Oh,
we're not as young as you probably think.
Yeah, I was a year old when this all happened. So.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, we got you by 10 years at least, I guess you could say. anyway, so he had left, and he was gone for quite a long time, at least almost the full hour of the class that we had. And as we were in there causing mischief and doing some things, playing war and stuff with rubber bands and all that stuff, we were having a lot of fun as kids. Of course, you will. When the cat's away, the mouse will play. That's what they say. And we took liberty of that. And as we were doing that, all of a sudden, as we were in there, Doris Young, who was the perpetrator's wife at the time, she opened the door and called out to us and said, "Hey, children, I need you to come down to the second grade room and join us for an assembly that we're having." And so me and everybody else thinking, okay, we got an assembly that's going on. Hey, cool. We weren't expecting this. And she seemed nice to me. She spoke in a nice, soft tone, and we all ended up trusting her, and we all got in our single file line like you do when you're in grade school, and just started heading down the hallway into the room where they were holding everybody at a bomb, and also kind of in a way with at gunpoint, but he had guns. But anyway, as we were walking down the hallway and coming closer to the room, I distinctly remember the thoughts and feelings I had as I was getting closer. And there was a lot of, I don't know how to explain it, but there was just a lot of kids. Well, the kids were crying, and there's a lot of, I guess you'd say, confusion and everything that was going on in because of the situation, and teachers were trying to calm kids and stuff. But we were actually at the time one of the last classrooms to get in there. So we were walking into this, seeing this going on at the time. And as I was getting closer to the room, like I was saying, I kind of felt like the feeling didn't feel right. And as I walked into the room, I was like, this is the weirdest assembly I've ever seen, because I'd never seen guns lined along the chalkboard during an assembly, and let alone some random guy looking like he's miserable in the middle of the floor next to a cart that had some stuff in it that I didn't know it was at the time. I didn't understand it. And it was a little confusing, a little scary in a way, just because of what I was seeing as we were walking in. And then as we were getting in there, they instructed us to go sit near or next to our classmates, our teacher. And so I headed over to where he was, and during the time in the room, like I was saying, there was a lot of confusion and chaos. But amongst that, there was a lot of prayers going on, especially amongst a lot of the smaller groups of the classrooms, of the classmates, and also individuals were saying their own prayer. You could see it and see that it was happening. And just a lot of, even though there was chaos, there was peace that was in the room too because of that. We were in the room probably at least about 2.5, almost 3 hours, just prior to the bomb going off. But I was sitting closer to what we would say is the west side of the room, or the east side of the room, sorry, near the windows. And I was probably sitting about 2 feet from the bomb at the time. And sitting there, and I was just watching the television they had going, playing with some things, and sitting there. As I was sitting there, I had a very strong impression. The Spirit speak to me and say, "Jeremy, go over to the window." So I distinctly stood up and started walking over towards the window. And as I got closer to the window, closer to where I was going to sit down, that's when the bomb goes off. I didn't see an angel that day, but I did have a prompting from the Holy Ghost tell me to move. And I think that if I hadn't moved like that, I would have been part of the shrapnel, or at least from the bomb when it went off. And as I was in the room after the bomb went off, I remember from the time when we were being taught and trained as elementary kids to, and during a situation like that, get down low and make sure you're not going to be in the, if there's a fire, you just want to stay low so the smoke doesn't get to you. So I remember crawling over to the window from there. And I don't know your audience if they will have seen the movie or not, The Cofield Miracle, but in the movie it shows the window and how it opens up towards the outside. But there was a bunch of kids going through the window at the time when I was approaching it. And our teacher, Mr. Moore, was one of the person just before me that actually was going to end up jumping through the window. And he did. And in the movie, it shows this part where he gets his belt caught on the actual latch of the window. I remember seeing that, and I actually kind of helped tug on his feet, and he finally fell through and started helping more kids out. A few more kids went through, and I finally got the opportunity to go through the window. And during this time, or in this circumstance, my two sisters were there also, my sister Gina and Julia both. My sister Gina was just a grade younger than me, and my sister Julia was in kindergarten at the time. And she and they had already left out of two different exits before I got out the window. And immediately, as soon as I got out, I thought, I've got to find my sisters. And so I started heading towards Main Street, which was probably about a half a block away from the school, and ended up meeting up with them at Main Street, where my older sister, Jennifer, was there, ready to receive us and get us in the ambulance and take us to the Montpelier Hospital, where we ended up being. When my parents actually did that day, they planned on being out of town. And they were in Ogden at the time, Ogden, Utah. And when they heard all this going down, they actually had heard it on the radio. My dad hardly ever listens to the radio. He just had this feeling that he needed to turn on the radio, and he did. And he ended up turning it on and hearing that the Cofield Elementary School was being held hostage. And he put the pedal to the metal, like they say, in a Ford Escort. Remember that car? Old hatchback Ford Escort. And he ended up trying to make record time getting to Montpelier, Idaho from where they were. And they didn't know at first where we were, but they had called some friends in Cokeville, and they said that most of the children were taken to the Montpelier Hospital, but they believed that we were taken to the Montpelier Hospital where they met up with us and everything. And so, but yeah, that's my story in a nutshell. Do you have any questions or anything from that?
Yeah, when you heard the voice telling you to get up, for you, was it an audible voice or was it something that was more an impression put in your mind?
It was more of an audible voice that spoke to me and said that statement to me, Jeremy, get up and go over to the window. And I distinctly remember it and just how the feeling that came over me as soon as it, and for me, I contribute that to being the Holy Ghost, to prompt me to do something. And sometimes you hear it as a clear voice in your mind that you need to go do this. And that's exactly what happened. And I had this feeling of peace come over me as soon as it happened to move. And it was at that point, I just had the feeling that this wouldn't be the end of my life and the circumstance we had there. It wouldn't be the end of everything that I now have built in my life, my family and everything. I just had that feeling that I'd be okay.
Yeah, that's great. I do have more thoughts, mm-hmm. but I just kind of want to hear Brad's perspective on things and then we can circle back.
Sounds good. So, I'm assuming most of the people that listen to your podcast probably don't really know much about Cokeville or anything. So I was going to give a little facts too.
Awesome.
Well, of course it happened on May 16th, 1986. There were about 154 total hostages. 136 of them were the children, and around 18 were either teachers, staff, or just visitors. And that does include the UPS lady got stuck into it, of all things. So she got caught into that. The David Young, he was at one time our actual town marshal back when we were younger in 1975. So we were probably 1 or 2 years old back in the day when he was there, but he was the town marshal, which is kind of a crazy thing. The other thing about it, he brought a gasoline bomb in. He brought in guns and different things. Really, just kind of give you kind of a heads up of what's going on. He did explode the bomb. We all did survive. And then this is just our individual story of how it is. I try to tell everybody, and I use this analogy, when you go to a family reunion, you'll have a different opinion of how the reunion went than maybe a cousin, right? Mm-hmm. But the family reunion was the same, mm-hmm. right? So we are going to have a little bit different viewpoints of how things occurred. But that's just how our mind took it in. It doesn't make anyone's story any greater or less value. And so I just want to bring that kind of up because, you know, there are people out there that obviously they always want to not believe in something of a higher being, or they want to always try to find a way to say, well, that didn't really happen. And that's fine. But anyway, I just kind of usually start with a little bit of that. So a little bit about me. I've always been a little bit ADD, and it probably will never go away. So when I was young back then, we used to love to play. Cokeville's a very sport oriented town. It's a very religious town. Also, I wanted to say input, even though we are LDS, I want to really just emphasize just the supreme being, someone that we all know exists. We might call him different names, all that type of stuff. But the reality is it's the same whether, no matter what religion you are, is how I kind of look at it. I do have my personal beliefs, but I want to just make sure people understand, you know, God's God, prayer's prayer, doesn't matter who you are, what you're doing, and he's going to love you and answer you. He's also going to give you his miracles, his tender mercies. And so on this particular day was like any day for me. I was a little mischief little boy. We'll start right there at noon. We had had recess. We'd been playing football. And I'm going to take liberty and say we were whooping up on somebody. Jeremy and I were. But I can't say that too. It's a little hard-hearted or light-hearted, I guess, is the way to, not hard-hearted, light-hearted. I was an extremely small kid growing up. I'll give an example. So at that time, I might have been 60 pounds and pretty short. When I graduated high school, I broke 100 pounds my senior year in that March.
That's pretty small. Yeah.
And I was 5'7". So just to give you a little bit, so I was kind of this little small shrimp, little kind of kid, but personality made up for it. Let's put it that way. So anyway.
Anymore, right, Brett?
Say what?
Not that small.
No, so, you know, no, I'm not small anymore. I'm 6'3". I'm a good
say,
two.
I feel like you, I would think of you as tall. And
yeah, I'm 6'3". My boy's 6'3". Jeez. I'm 220. So that's a different story. I eventually grew, but it was like after I graduated, it was kind of crazy. In fact, I gained 35 pounds on my just the MTC in 3 weeks, basically 10 pounds a week.
Gosh.
So I didn't notice it from my look, but I guess if I took my shirt off, you'd see it in my ribs, if that sort of made sense. Uh-huh. But anyway, that's a side note. So it's noon. It's May 16th, which, by the way, it's crazy. It's literally the anniversary's coming up. Mm-hmm. It'll be the 40th year. It's crazy. It's been that long ago. It does feel like yesterday. It'll be a memory obviously ingrained in all of our heads who were involved. Anyway, so it's noon. We've just come in from recess, playing football, having a good time. Our classroom, we had to go all the way down through the building, almost to the other end on the, it's kind of hard. If I had a map, it'd be kind of easier to show you, but it's kind of a further away area. It's our music room. When we got there, Mr. Miller had mentioned that he was going to go out and get the video, and we were going to watch this amazing junior high instrumental masterpiece, right? And he was going to critique us. You all know when you go there, those are sweet. But anyway, a little tongue in cheek there. So Jeremy and I, we're in there, we're in that room, and I'm going to blame this on Jeremy, but we decided war was appropriate. So we started getting chairs and lining them up, and we got our rubber bands out. This room also dubs as the art room. So there's a lot of fun, artsy, fartsy stuff that's in there that you can really make some good things. And I was a percussionist, so all of our percussion equipment would be stored in that same room. So I'd go in there, and I kind of knew where things were. So, you know, Jeremy prompted me to go get all that stuff. But anyway, I might have pushed that a little further than other people. But so in Jeremy's scenario, he was in the room with everybody. They were all playing. I had already got my ADHD, and I had already gone back into that room where the drums were, and I was with Colton McDermott. He's another good friend of mine, and we were the drummers. We were back there, and we were kind of messing around, and she had come and cleared the room unbeknownst to us. We're still in this closet. Well, he had thrown a piece of clay or something, and from my memory, it hit the bass drum and it made the boom, you know, and she heard it. Weird. Or I'd probably be still playing in there today. Who knows? Anyway, so she heard the boom. She comes over and she opens the door. And she wasn't as nice as Jeremy portrays it in his. I think she was perturbed at this point. She had already cleared pretty much the whole school. We're the last two. course, we're in this closet, and she's just probably just annoyed with the whole thing. So she's like, you got to get down to the first grade, second grade room. We're having this assembly. And I can't remember if it's first or second, but anyway, go down to the room. We're going to have this assembly. And so we're like, okay. So we start heading down the hall. And, you know, I'm a kid. I'm walking down. I see the bathroom. So I'm like, oh, I better go to the bathroom before. So I go into there, and she follows me in. And we have this little heart-to-heart conversation where I explain to her, this is the boys' room, not the girls' room. And I'm sure you can just imagine how this went down. And we had this little argument. And even back then, I didn't lose too many of those arguments. Anyway, so she's like, go ahead, get done so we can go. And then she just like stands there, and I'm like, you got to move. I can't just do this with you here. So she like goes around the corner. I get done. We come out. We start coming down around the corner. When you have to, at the end of the hall, it's not quite the end, but it's almost, it branches to the right. And that's how you head down to the second grade room. Well, on that corner is the water fountain. Well, I'm thirsty now, you know, so I got to stop and get a drink. So this gives you my ADHD world. But anyway, so at this point, she reaches down and she grabs my ear, right? And I know every kid who might be listening to this today, like, he grabbed your ear. You got to sue him. Anyway, back then, that's legal. You know, they could have, they could literally beat you. But anyway, and I might have known a little few beatings once in a while in my life. But anyway, so she's kind of perturbed. Anyway, Colton had already made it there. I'm the last one. As she starts to get me going, she lets go of my ear, and I'm ahead of her. A little feedback on me. Sorry, I'm kind of jumping around. I've always been a person who just knew the Lord existed, knew God. I didn't have to go to church. I didn't have to be told. It was sort of like this innate thing that's just in my soul and my heart. And I joke around, but I have this weird phenomenon where I'll dream of actual things that occur. And then later I'll be like, it's the deja vu. And I can literally be like, there's the car, it's driving by. Like I can remember it. Like it's crazy. So I've kind of got this little connection there. Anyway, as I get approaching this room, I instantly feel the pure evil of it. And I don't want to go. And she's kind of pushing me in. And I'm the very last child going in the room. She's already collected literally every single person. I'm the last one. And when I get to the room, David's sitting against the table. He's got his guns and stuff against the wall. He's kind of looking over at the doorway at her, at his wife. And they have some weird glance and whatnot. And she just kind of says, go find your class. And I start kind of looking. And I start noticing these different groups of kids. And some had teachers, some didn't. And it was really a cool thing to watch the youth and how our education in our religion had motivated us to just know when to pray, when to just having a knowledge of all this stuff. And so there were many prayers said. Jeremy will attest to it. I probably was a part of 20 different prayers, whether it was group or personal. I remember being an older kid, and even though I was a young, restless boy with ADD, I am pretty smart, I would say. And he gave us his manifesto, and I would read it, which it didn't make sense as a kid that age, but I understood guns. Like I grew up on a ranch. We've hunted, we've done all these things. We're 10 years old. I mean, we've got some experience, life experiences to get an idea that this wasn't a good thing. And I would think in my head a few times, was I ever going to see my mom and dad again? Those type of feelings and thoughts went through my head. But anyway, so as we're going, we're praying, and I start getting a little more. Well, right before that all happens, I get over to Rocky Moore fairly quick, and he has this little tiff with David, where there's a little exchange, and I can't remember exactly how it goes, but he basically points a gun at him and pretty much tells him to shut up and sit down. And I was the little boy in front of him when that all kind of happened. So I remember thinking the end of a pistol really looks big once it's pointed at you. And I was nervous he was going to get shot, or I was going to get shot at the time. And anyway, so he backs off, and eventually he lays down on the ground, and I stick with him. And 1986 was an incredible year as far as crazy things that happened. So that's when the shuttle blew up. Do you guys remember hearing about the shuttle, mm-hmm. the Challenger and Krista McAuliffe and all that? Mm-hmm. So we watched that just 2 months earlier live. And so obviously I have great memory of some of these things, but that'll come into play in a minute. But anyway, I'm laying on his belly. And as I'm sitting there, they've brought the TV at this time. By the time I got there, windows were open. The TV hadn't quite made it into the room. There was that heavy smell of the gasoline. You get sick to your stomach. I mean, you know how it is with gas. I mean, it makes your stomach sick. You just don't feel well. You get lightheaded and stuff like that. So it had kind of aired out a little bit. They brought this TV in. We were watching these cartoons. I'm laying on Rocky Moore's belly, and a voice just like you and I are talking, it just said, Brad, go to the window. And I thought it was Rocky Moore. I actually turned to him, kind of leaned over, turned at him and said, what? Did you say something? And he goes, what? We kind of had that what moment. And then he's like, I didn't say anything. And I said, oh, okay. And I sat there for a moment, and then the countenance of the room changed for me. We've all had these. I know everyone in the world at some point has had a very spiritual experience. I just know God's that prevalent. And this was one of those times where if my highest thing that's happened in my life since then, you'd have to times it by 10 to get to that level again. It was really that amazing. So your goosebumps kind of had goosebumps, if that makes sense. And I really felt, and then the voice came out this time again, and it said my full name, Bradley Shane Nate, go to the window. This wasn't in my head. It was very audible, just as you and I are having this conversation over the internet. So I knew at that time what it was. The veil got thin for me, and I noticed the feelings, and I did what I was asked. So I went over to the window. So now I'm over at the window, and I'm sitting on this little tiny windowsill that only my little behind could probably sit. And just below it, so the windowsill is maybe 3 or 4 inches tall. And then below it is it's a bookcase that goes across the whole wall. And that's where all the books are. So like my feet are on the bookcase and my butt's on the windowsill, and the windows are open. And these are the type of windows that they bend out from the bottom. And then it kind of, you have to undo the hook like this and it opens up, which makes the window actually smaller as far as the opening goes, because it kind of slides down, if that makes sense. Anyway, so it's open. We're sitting there. I'm playing with this woodblock game, and it gets knocked out of my hand. Not by a student, not something that I actually saw, but I felt something knock it out of my hand. And I leaned forward, looked down. Colton McDermott, of all things, Colton was right there. He was in the other windowsill. He like jumps and turns from my recollection. And right then the bomb explodes. And it's like the sound goes away is the best way to explain that. There's an extremely loud bang. It was quiet. Intense heat was all over my body and my face. And I remember looking forward, and I could see, if you've seen the movie or you get a chance to see the movie, they do kind of portray it in there. Doris is basically ablaze. It had just lit her up like a candle. And I remember seeing that and thinking that's a horrific thing to watch. And I see these two little feet in front of me. I cannot figure out what's going on, but I just see these little feet and they're really close to my face. And all of a sudden, and all this stuff's happening quick, but in my mind, it's slowed down a lot. Does that sort of make sense? Mm-hmm. So, and it's amazing what your brain can think and do in such a short amount of time. So I'm over here going, I'm just confused on this. I still don't have any sound yet, but the intense heat on my face and my body, I was like, it was hard to breathe. Does that? And I think the wind was knocked out of me. And then all of a sudden I realized they're my feet. I had been so close to the window that when all that air and pressure went out, it sucked me out and I'm hanging out butt end out that stupid window. So I'm bent like an accordion with my butt hanging out this window. And I think the one thing that really kind of held me in there, and my shirt was kind of bunched up and the handle had kind of caught it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in there and all of a sudden the sound starts, I start hearing that ringing noise first, you know, I remember that like tinnitus sound, whatever they call that. And then I could hear her screaming. And then that kind of got dulled out because all of a sudden I heard the kids screaming. And then all of a sudden her view went away and all I saw were hands coming at me like this. And they just started pushing on me until I went out the window. And it was really pitch black, except the only thing you really could see, obviously I was close to the window so I could see me and my feet, but you could only see obviously her burning. It was so black in there though. So I hit the ground, you know, behind first in this like planter area. And it's extremely bright day that day. It wasn't warm, but it was a bright day. It's a bright sunny day. And in my mind, I thought I had died. And I was watching this and I was going to heaven. Because I came from this horrible place out to seeing the beautiful sky. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, this is the Krista McAuliffe story. I'm thinking, this is how Krista McAuliffe died. Is that the weirdest thing that a kid would think? And I'm over here going, it really wasn't that bad. And then all of a sudden the pain in my back started hurting. The ringing and like the reality of life, I'm alive, right? The reality of life hit me. And I'm like, I'm not dead, I'm alive. And I get up and I take off running. And I'm like a greased pig. You've got 100 people trying for you, and I'm not allowing them to get near me. So one of the things that he did is he kind of, in his manifesto and different things, he talks about, we know he's a policeman and different stuff. He kind of brainwashed me a little bit where I didn't trust anyone. Does that sort of make sense? No one looked familiar to me. And when you're scared and petrified like that, I don't care who they are. Unless it's family, I don't, you know, or some big thing. Anyway, I'm darting and I'm going left and right and I'm off. So I was the last one in the room and I was the first one out. Great, great there. But anyway, so I'm taking off. I'm coming around the corner. Everybody's kind of barricaded back and they're all trying to capture me. And I'm zigging and I'm zagging. And then I just happened to see the only safe thing in my mind, which was our fire chief back then. And he's just sitting there and I stop for him. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of think, okay, this is safe. Everyone else just seems scary to me. And right when I did that, their focus all of a sudden changed and went to the teacher to my left, which was my music teacher of all things, Mr. Miller, who got shot in the back. And he's like, my back. He reaches back. He kind of bends over and they start looking at him. And the moment I saw the blood, the race was on again. I took off. Now, I live out on the countryside, so I don't live in town. I live out on a ranch. But my grandpa and my grandma live in town, and they are the start of the third city block away from where the school is, if that sort of makes sense. By the time you get there, she's like on the third block. So it's good two blocks. Anyway, I take off. And now there's other adults chasing me still because they recognize, oh boy, he's gone. And I blew him out of, Delbert Renfro tells a story later that he says, he's like, you were 3 feet above the ground, You weren't even touching, and you looked like Roadrunner, and you were just killing everybody. No one was even going to even remotely be close to you. So I'm making distance, and I get over to Grandma's house. You have to run through the back door. I kick the door open, and Grandma's sitting there. She's this old, frail lady. Back in those days, you know, they had to put that little thing over their hair and they tie it under their chin so their hair doesn't get in a mess. And she's in the middle of doing this because she's heard about the bomb going off on the radio. And so in her mind, she's like, oh my gosh, we got to get together. We got to get over there. So she's getting ready and she's like tying this. I hit the door. I come running in and she has this really surprised look on her. She just does not. I mean, she's baffled. And I jump in the air with one step and I'm jumping right into her arms. Good thing I only weighed 50, 60 pounds back then because she probably didn't weigh much more than that herself. And I lit into her arms and she caught me with her arms and then her hands kind of cupped at the top of my head. And she kind of told the story that it really scared her because when she touched my hair, a lot of the hair was coming off like sand. From that, and that's how hot that room was. It had singed me. And I don't know if it was just where I was. I know the explosion went straight up and then it kind of curved and came out around, you know what I mean, around the edges. So I don't know how that all happened, but she kind of recounts that story, how it was kind of, now I know I'm bald, but that wasn't because of that. But anyway, so she's just like, what's going on? How did you get out? She thought I got out before the bomb went off. I mean, I was there so quick in her mind. And I was like, no, I mean, the guy did it and whatever. Well, now back at the bomb, I have an older brother. His name's Greg. And he was 1 year older than me. So he was a sixth grader. He got out, but he didn't know where I was. No one knew who I was. Even when they started asking around, the people chasing, they, you know how when you're in a panic, you don't really, I don't even know what kid that was, you know? So they don't know where I'm at. They're looking for me. They're doing the, you know, the number game, the everyone's name. They're checking everybody off. They can't find me. So eventually the phones are bad because there's a log of everyone trying to call in or call out. And this is back before cell phones. So this is all landline stuff. So they don't know where I'm at really. But anyway, at this point, my parents are both out of town. My mom is working in a small town next to us called Montpelier, Idaho. And she had come home at lunch to have, not home, she went to my grandma's house to have a sandwich. And they heard it on the radio. So they had been listening to it on the radio while it's going on. Mm-hmm. And then they got the guts to get in the car and start driving to Cokeville. And they got about halfway there when the bomb went off. And she recounts some kind of like that she did. They just had to stop because, I mean, it just was emotional. You know, you'd wreck or something. So that was her scenario. My dad was driving a bus for the seniors, and he was bringing them back from Salt Lake somewhere. I think they were close to Evanston at the time. And he had a lady while they were sitting there at the pull-in. She was getting gas, and she says, man, they looked at the bus, and the bus said, Lincoln County number 2, Star Valley, you know, and they had borrowed this Star Valley bus instead of a Cokeville bus because we kind of share these buses anyway. So she's like, man, that's really horrible. What's going on with your neighbors? And he's like, our neighbors, what do you, you know, and that's how he learned about it. Cause they don't really listen to radios on the buses. And so I think they all got, he went in and told the leaders and they all got everyone on the bus. And he said he had that thing pegged at as fast as that it would allow it. But, and it went off, the bomb went off when they were almost at border, which is about, well, not border, sorry, Sage Junction, which is about 25 miles away. And so here they are, parents, right? They hear the bomb going off. And then they're saying they're survivors, but we are now sending them out to the hospitals. And so they're splitting them. They're taking them to Kemmer. They're taking them to Afton. They're taking them even to Logan. They're taking them to Montpelier. And my mom is like freaking out. She's like, where do I go? Do I go there? And then they've just passed me, or what do I do? You know? So they're all freaking out. Anyway, long story. We end up, my parents do get to the town. They come to grandma's. We all kind of collect there. My brothers all eventually get there. I had an older brother who was in high school who he had gone home somehow, but he had eventually got there. His name was Randy. Jeremy had older siblings as well that were in the high school. And anyway, we all get collected and then they decide, hey, you know, you probably, I had some dark charcoal or whatever on us, you know, and near our noses and stuff. So they were worried about smoke inhalation and different stuff. So they wanted us to go to the hospital and we ended up getting there, but everyone lived. Yeah. I mean, I had this really cool connection with my guardian angels, I guess is the best way to put it. Jeremy talks about it, you know, the spirit. I believe it's a collective of all of those things. I'm a firm, after listening to stories of others, it's affirmed to me that your guardian angels are your family that have passed on before you. And I'm not sure who was talking to me. I will tell you, it was, they were on a high level because the spirit was extremely high. When that all occurred, that 10 times, you know, the most spiritual thing you've ever had, times it by 10 now. And I've never got there back there again, if that sort of makes sense. Anyway, they're special angels out there for us. You know what I mean? And they were looking out for us. Maybe Christ himself was there. It's kind of hard to know. The veil was thin enough for me that I actually felt like there was movement in the room, if that makes sense. Like you could kind of visually see it, but it was more like it was a see-through, just, I don't know. And then the comfort in my, I knew I was safe. The moment I was told to go to the window, my entire fear, my worry of never seeing my parents, it totally went away. I didn't really recognize it at the time, like, but looking back after we all got together and we told our stories and that's part of your therapeutic, you know what I mean? You kind of go through it all that I recognized, man, I didn't even have a fear. I mean, it was done. It was gone. Of course, when the bomb went off, that was a different fear, but that was just the human side of it. But anyway, yeah, I mean, that's my story. If you guys have any questions, of course I'm a jabber, but go ahead.
No, I love all the details and I think that other people will appreciate that too. Something that I was thinking is later on, as you guys both had kids, was that a concern? I mean, I would think and assume that that would be something that you would process and think about. And, you know, what was that like for you guys?
Yeah, I think I was kind of blessed with the, with just the not having fear from this whole circumstance. There's a lot of people that came out of this circumstance that had a lot of fear. They didn't even want to be involved in the Coalfield Miracle Project or the movie that there was going on at the time in 2015 when they were filming this. And because they didn't want to bring back those memories, those feelings that they had. For me, I welcomed it. So did Brad, because we knew this could help people get through times like this and give them help, even though their circumstance may not be the same. For my sister, Julia, she was sitting at home one day, and as she's sitting there, all of a sudden she hears this loud boom noise. And in fact, what it was the neighbor down the street, their propane tank blew up, and her mind immediately went to, where's my kids? I need to find them, because she had those feelings come back to her that this is a dangerous situation. I need to go protect my own. And for me, I never really had that fear come to me. But I still, you know, of course, with your children, you fear for them. You don't want them to be hurt, you just want them to always be protected. And so at any point in time, if I ever had a circumstance like that, it never brought me back to that moment, which I think was a blessing for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember all the exact details of that event. I just remember the more major points, probably in a way for me to protect the way I may feel later about it. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's just kind of how I feel about that. So
like Jeremy, sorry, are you done, Jeremy?
Sorry. Yeah, no, you're good.
So like Jeremy, I always revert back to like my inner knowledge of always knowing there's a supreme being. Does that sort of make sense? Like mm-hmm. it is the one blessing that God gave me that's blessed me the most, obviously. But it also, I don't question so many, like I don't get into the weeds of questioning things just to be confused. I just accept the bigger picture. Does that sort of make sense? Because we can always just fine tune it down and be nitpicky, but we don't need to do that. And God doesn't really want us to do that. He wants us to study and know things, but it's not the same. But anyway, so I believe, so when I got off my mission, so I lived in Cokeville, obviously, till we graduated and went on a mission. When I got home, I moved to Logan, which was at the time the best decision in my life, not just temporally, but spiritually, because people had questions about the bombing. You'd say, I'm from Cokeville, they'd ask you about it. They'd talk to you. You have people that are anti people that want to, you know, tear your story, and you just move on and you don't deal with that. But the majority being near Utah and just having religious people, whether they're LDS or not, because there are plenty non-LDS people asking questions. I would just say that I was the cup up to receive blessings versus the cup down. If that sort of makes sense. I like that analogy. I want to grow from this, and I don't. There's a lot of trauma that happens to everyone. Everyone in the world has their own specific trauma thing that happens to them. And it is the fear and all of that. That's not from God. That's all Satan. And he wants you to be down on yourself. And when you're down on yourself and you cannot get yourself to be the cup up, right, to receive the blessings, to get past it, then you do harm people around you. You can make things miserable. It can be a spouse. It can be your kids. It can be all kinds of things. It doesn't matter. So you really owe it not just to yourself, but everyone who loves and abuses and around you, because misery loves company, and happiness loves company too, right? So you want to try to get to where you need to be. But so living away was a therapy, because I got to talk about the bombing. When I was younger, I did have a couple you'd have nightmares. You can imagine, right? So on the temporal side, right? Just temporal side. I don't like bearded people. White vans are not cool. I've had incidences in my life around certain scenarios where you're on edge. You know what I'm saying? Like you're the big bear, right? There's the mama bear, but dad, you don't want to mess with daddy bear either. But anyway, so my kids would go, I got married. My kids went to school in River Heights, which is a little suburb of Logan. And we would go into these parent-teacher conferences, and I would literally point people out, not just parent-teacher conferences, but I was a FedEx courier too. So I would go in here and deliver, do different things, and I'd recognize people that shouldn't be there, and I'd call it out. And it drive my wife nuts a little bit, but there would be teachers that'd be like, how do you know that that's not a teacher? I'm like, I just know it. Like just the way they walk, their mannerisms, just my heightened understanding of reading the room. Does that sort of make sense? And mm-hmm. anyway, so 2020 comes, you know, COVID, everyone's acting weird. They're closing some schools down, different stuff. We moved back to Cokeville, and I thought this will be an awesome opportunity for my kids. They can have an opportunity to go play sports because it's a smaller school. They be in plays and different things that you just can't do in bigger schools because there's just so many other people who need to be involved in it too. So we get to Cokeville, and the hardest thing for me was walking through the doors of that elementary. Cause it's the elementary. It's not a elementary. And, it was hard. It was extremely hard. And, it gave me a lot of respect for the people who have left, who never left and had their kids there and what they've had to deal with. My kids were a little bit older, so I only had a few years of it, but I used to always joke around and tell people, I think it's built on an Indian burial ground, or we've upset some spirit or something. Cause that place is just never been a very good memory for me. But anyway, because of that, and we're able to talk about it, we become this outlet, and we're able to help others relieve their spiritual or recognize their spiritual things or recognize their tender mercies, which are, by the way, miracles, right? Mm-hmm. These are little miracles that become something. And you might not be this person who survives a bomb, but maybe you have to survive a perpetrator or a bad uncle, or maybe it's alcohol. Maybe it's porn. Maybe it's something that's just a horrible thing in your life that you've got this, that's a hard thing to overcome. But if you take the right steps and your cup's open and you're doing, and you're striving to just be that good person, you're going to get through it just fine. You're going to survive. It'll be awesome. Life's worth living. I know suicides are high now, and it's because Satan has got this mental hold on people, and we need to keep our cup up. When it's pointed down, you can't catch a thing. So,
great analogy.
Just, I don't know. I'm on the city council here in town. One of the things I wanted to do, and a few others, we wanted to make a Memorial Day on that day. Sandy Hook has already done it. Columbine, different states have already done this, right? And we caught a lot of backlash from a few. Sometimes the loudest people are really not the majority, if that makes sense, but they're just the loudest people. And they have their right to feel their way. But that's the part of life I try to explain to people, especially when we do these firesides or we talk about this. It's you that has to make that decision that I'm not going to let this rule over me. Right? If you let it rule over you, you will have those horrible thoughts. You know what I'm saying? But if you don't allow it, then you're going to be happy. You're going to have a wonderful life. You're going to get married. You're going to have kids. They're going to have wonderful things. Are you still going to have days you don't want to go to church, or maybe you didn't pray when you should have, or you've whatever. I don't know. Yeah, you'll have those days. I'm not a perfect person. I'm like everybody else. There's days I wake up and say, I don't want to go to church today. But that's the human of me. But the reality is, I can't deny there's angels out there. I can't deny that God doesn't live, and I can't deny the extreme power of prayer. We believe obviously in the priesthood, which is an amazing thing, but prayer is probably the biggest thing in the world that we share, definitely collective along all of our brothers and sisters, LDS or not, that connects you to God. And you can have a great conversation with him, and you're going to be enlightened.
I love that thought of the cup up. Mm-hmm. That I've never heard it like that. And yeah, that is awesome. For the sake of time, I wanted to touch on a couple things, and I wanted to talk quite a bit more about the miracles of the bomb that day, but our episode on Wednesday touches on that. So I'll let everybody tune in more on that coming episode. And I also want everybody to go and do some of their own research on some of the stuff that happened and the divine, whether or not you attribute all of it to God or whatever your thought process or faith system might be, there are some incredible things that happened that day that saved many lives, that saved every life other than the two perpetrators. I love how you both were called by name and it was personal for you. That is something that I have felt many times in my life. And when that's kind of how I differentiate where that voice is coming from. Most of the time when it is my name addressing me by name, I know who and where it comes from. And that just helps me to know that I am loved and known individually as a son of God. And that has been a great blessing in my life. So I challenge all of our listeners to pay attention and to really find out if God knows you by name. I promise you he does. And that simple truth will help you through anything that life throws at you. I know that there were many students that day that saw things that the normal human eye doesn't see. It's incredible. I love hearing and reading about those stories. So again, I challenge everybody to go do a little research and find out, and certainly watch the movie. I did want to ask you guys, do you feel like the movie was done pretty well? It gave that day justice?
Yeah, I felt like it did. From what I was told, the producer of the movie itself, what was his name, Brad? I'm forgetting now.
T.C. Christensen. T.C. Christensen.
When he was doing the movie, he wanted to try to make it as accurate as he possibly could. And he even wanted to get as many people that would be involved in the movie that were part of the circumstance or the hostage situation to be in it also. And so he had a few of those people, a lot of those people actually in there. I didn't get the opportunity to be in it. I wanted to be, but I found out about a little bit too late to really be involved in it much. But I was told that it's about 95% accurate to the actual event that happened. And when you hear the ending of the movie and you hear the people's testimony and stories, they're attesting to that truth from this movie, that it's that close. And of course there's some details in the movie that weren't exact. Sure. They couldn't be exact, obviously. They had to tell a storyline, but at least the actual events that happened and the way they happened did happen that way.
I was part of the movie. I was actually part of the movie a little bit. They interviewed us and we had some discussions and different things about it. And he did want to be very accurate. The Ron Hartley story is very accurate. It's kind of going through his life as the investigator and his spiritual struggle, as well as what was going on in his kids and all that. So it's very accurate. I was able to talk kind of with their family when the movie was going and different things. And, but unbeknownst to us as kids, we didn't know that that's their life and their story. So, but as far as like the story, you know, their names and when they got there and stuff like that, some of the main fact parts are very accurate, obviously. There is a little bit, you got to dramatize something. So maybe it wasn't exactly what the kids said to the T, you know what I mean? Like it was just kind of what they had remembered. But as far as like, I'm not joking, when the bomb goes off and you see Doris on fire, that's almost, I don't see the movie. I see the real thing. And it's pretty accurate. That's a horrific thing. One thing you'll never get out of your head or your nostril is the smell of someone burning and the sound of someone burning. And even though I was there very short, it's a memory. And yeah, I mean, it's a very accurate movie. Like I said, back to the whole thing I said earlier, everybody has their different angle of the event, right? They met, some went to a door, some went, oh, by the way, back to the facts. You want to know some facts? 70% of us were over by the window. You need to get the picture of where we were when the bomb went off. It literally shows this whole congregation by the window. It's pretty amazing. And when you get into some of the facts, like if you start looking the Wyoming archives and looking into the investigator and stuff, not Hartley, but the bomb investigator, he talks about how this should have killed us. All these different reasons why it didn't, that are literally miracles, because there's not a scientific or whatever method that would make it happen any other way. It just did what it did. But so it's very accurate. I think the first movie was obviously more dramatic and they put a little more story into it, but this is the one you want. If you really want to really look at something, you want to look about where angels intervene, it's the book. And what's cool about that is it's everyone's individual testimony of the day. So it doesn't read like a book from book to cover, but it gives each and everyone's personal story. And you're going to hear all the stories of the angels. And it's an amazing book. It's not a wonderful read, just the way it is, but it's an amazing book.
Well, thank you both so much for joining with us and for talking about it. Like,
I'll give a plug real quick. Sorry. It's on Amazon. Go out and get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can get it on Kindle. It's really affordable. I think it's $5-6 or something.
I will post the link for everybody to be able to find it. Okay. Before we go, I'd love for both of you to bear testimony on something that you know to be true. Just one thing that you know to be true.
What I know to be true is God, if he wants you to be protected and in all the things you're trying to accomplish in your life, he will intervene. And not only that, but I really know that prayer is a way for you to communicate with him. And then the Spirit teaches you, communicates back to you and tells you what you need to do and how you need to, you know, guide you throughout your life. I know that prayer is real. I know that prayer is something that you can actually use to talk with our Father in heaven, and he will give you direction and he'll guide you at every step of the way. And sometimes you're being guided and you don't even know it. I know that God lives. I know he understands our circumstances, and I know he wants to protect us. And sometimes it doesn't turn out the way you want it to. But because he has an eternal plan for us, I know that on the other side, if you don't make it, if for some reason, you will get all the rewards that he has in store for you. And I believe that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So for me, the real truth is the result does not change the love of God. We lived and were able to tell our story. There are others that did not. That doesn't mean they didn't have some type of intervention or that God didn't love them any less. The most powerful person that we love is Jesus. And he died on a cross and he suffered in Gethsemane worse than any other pain we've ever had. If God has to allow that to happen, our small trials that we find to be as big as his really is insignificant to the weight of what God's really trying to achieve here. And so whether we died or not, God loves me the same. It wouldn't have mattered to me. I'm glad it worked out the way it did, but just remember that trial or that cancer or that loved one who passed away, even though it's sad here on earth, knowing how God is in our future. That's that we believe, of course, especially in the LDS Church, that we're going to live with them again and we're going to have all these other things. That's what is the bigger picture. And that's what I know is true, truly true. And it doesn't matter if you're LDS or not. You're going to be there with your family. God's going to still bless you. And I appreciate the opportunity to be your guest today. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Absolutely.
You guys are awesome.
Same here. Thank you.
Along that note, I want to read what the little thing that was written at the very end of the show, and it goes along with what you said there, Brad. Hostages in other situations have not always been so fortunate as those at Cokeville Elementary, and we don't know why. Yet, even in Christ's day, not every leper was healed, nor was every blind person made to see. But now, just as then, we should recognize God's hand when we see it. Mm. Death does not take away the love that he has for us. And I know that that's true. We don't always know the answers of why some people are saved and protected and others aren't. But I know that, like you said, it does not take away his love for us. So,
or make it less.
Right.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
He has an eternal plan for us that we just need to
understand.
Just trust him. And he will put us and guide us and help us along the way for sure. I know that's true.
Amen.
You guys are so awesome.
Yes. Thank you so much. It was such an honor to have you on. And I hope that everybody goes and finds and sees all of the miracles from not only this story, but the miracles in your own life. And with that, we'll let everybody go. Go look for those angels.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.